That made her laugh until it started whining again in obvious pain. Natalie frowned and turned back to the boys.
Well, don't just stand there. She's hurting.
She stepped back around to study the situation.
I won't be able to lift it, she said, loudly enough for the boys to hear. But I think if I can cut the trunk, she'll be able to break free.
I can show you where,
Charlie declared, breaking from cover to join her. Instantly, the wolf laid its ears back and started growling again.
Hey, it's okay. I'm with her,
Charlie insisted, holding up his hands.
Shh, it's okay, girl. He's a friend,
Natalie confirmed, stroking the wolf's side. She relaxed, though her ears flicked about to follow Charlie's progress as he approached.
Okay, we can cut it right here,
he said after a moment, tapping a spot on the shattered trunk.
I think that'll work.
Natalie nodded.
You cut, she said. I'll keep her calm.
She knelt down at the wolf's side and resumed stroking the beast's flank.
Right.
Ben saw his best friend take a deep breath and raise his spell shooter.
Here goes.
He fired, and a thin white beam emerged from the weapon's barrel. It stayed there as Charlie lowered the weapon, wielding it like a saw handle with the beam as its blade. Smart, Ben thought as he watched. Charlie was using an air spell instead of a fire spell. The whole trunk could have caught on fire with a flame. Air was safer, cleaner, and it looked like it was working. The magical saw blade disappeared into the wood, cutting deeper and deeper. Charlie stopped and wiped his brow, then turned to Ben.
You really going to leave it all to me? This is brutal.
Ben rushed over, keeping an eye on the huge she-wolf that suddenly turned toward him.
Okay, okay, hand it over.
He accepted his friend's spell shooter and got to work, putting his back into it and sawing through the rest of the huge tree. Just before it pierced the bottom, he stopped to prevent any chance of cutting the wolf, too.
Okay,
he said, stepping back and giving the spell shooter back to Charlie. She should be able to get out now.
Great!
Natalie rose to her feet and tapped the giant wolf gently on the nose.
Come on, girl, she urged. One little push and you're free. Up you go.
The wolf yipped as if it understood. Then Ben saw its mighty shoulders shift, and with a powerful heave, it sprang to its feet. The mostly severed trunk shattered, shards flying every which way as the wolf stood upright and shook itself vigorously. Then it padded slowly over to Natalie.
Uh-oh.
The giant wolf peered down at Natalie, who stood still and faced it full on. It lowered its great head, its yellow eyes studying her intently. Then its tongue lashed out and scraped across her entire face, bathing her in saliva as the wolf yipped, wagging its tail.
Gee, thanks!
Natalie was laughing as she wiped her face clear.
And you're welcome.
She put her hand on the wolf's snout and smiled up at it before turning away to face the others.
Okay, ready when you are, she declared, beaming.
Yeah, yeah, Ben said, stepping slowly out into the open, grinning. Just because you were right doesn't mean you have to be so smug about it. It was times like these he was reminded there were still plenty of amazing things in the Unseen Kingdoms, even here in Aurelia. Chapter 22 The Pack.
Does it have to do that?
Charlie complained yet again as they walked through the woods. He was forced to duck yet again from a branch-sized appendage that nearly took his head off as it swept vigorously back and forth.
She can't help it. She's in a good mood,
Natalie replied, laughing, as she patted the enormous wolf loping beside her. It was true. Judging by the giant beast's wagging tail and wide grin, she was indeed a happy creature. Unfortunately, that made her a bit of a menace for the rest of them.
Maybe she could be a little less demonstrative about it,
Charlie suggested, pushing the tail out of his face yet again. Walking beside him, Ben carefully refrained from mentioning that Charlie had definitely not been complaining when it had been Natalie demonstrating affection. She had hugged him enthusiastically after he helped free the beast, and judging from his bright red cheeks and silly grin, Ben was almost certain his best friend had enjoyed the experience.
If she wants to stay with us, that's fine by me, Josh commented from Ben's other side.
All three boys had decided it was better to let Natalie and her new friend take the lead for now.
Things have been a lot quieter since she showed up.
That was also true. It felt like they had been battling creatures almost every step of the way through this forest, right up until they ran across the giant wolf, that is, and ever since there hadn't been another creature in sight. Evidently, having a horse-sized carnivore at your side made other predators reconsider if you were really worth the risk. Natalie had led each of the boys over to her in turn and presented them to the wolf as a friend. They endured being sniffed and nudged and then eventually licked. She no longer posed a threat to them, her tail aside. She was far more affectionate towards Natalie, of course. With her, the giant wolf behaved much like a small puppy, wriggling with delight and constantly turning to stare at, nudge or lick her. Natalie endured it with good grace, laughing and petting and talking with the beast as if it really were just a tiny house pet. When they'd finally called it a night and found a place to camp, the wolf had curled up protectively around all four of them. It had been like sleeping in a giant mound of blankets and pillows, and Ben had slept soundly, secure in the knowledge that nothing could possibly get to them. He could already picture the arguments they were going to have when it was finally time to go, about whether Natalie could bring the wolf back to the Institute with them.
"Hey, what's that up ahead?"
Charlie asked, snapping Ben out of his thoughts. He lifted his head up, trying to peer past the wolf to see what was wrong, but he couldn't see anything except the trees all around and the sun shining down from the cloudless blue sky. Wait, sky? Sure enough, the trees were beginning to thin in front of them, allowing wide expanses of clear blue to become visible above. Off in the distance, Ben saw something else now, too. Rooftops. That had to be what Charlie had noticed. It was an entire cluster of buildings, still some way off, but close enough for Ben to be sure that he was looking at a large town or possibly even a small city. It seemed likely this was where Dagmar had directed them to. There was a chance she meant somewhere further on, but they couldn't risk missing the others. They'd have to enter the city. Thankfully, that also meant proper food, fresh supplies, and information. Either way, they'd have to resupply. If Dagmar and the others didn't turn up, they would keep moving on their own. He realized this also meant they would probably need to part ways with Natalie's wolf before anyone in the city saw them. Ben was just trying to think of how to bring that up when he heard a strange whistling sound from up in the boughs of a large, sturdy tree up ahead. Glancing up, he thought he caught a flash of red, and just above that, a sparkle of blue, almost like eyes. Then there was an odd, fluted roar, and the top of the tree unfurled and leapt down to block their path.
"What the—"
Ben started, drawing his spellshooter and sword as he stumbled back a step or two, staring at the creature before them. Before he could finish the question, Charlie had responded.
"A manticore!"
His voice rose at the end to a near yelp.
"It's a bloody manticore! Run!"
And without drawing his own weapon, Charlie turned to flee.
"Run? We faced bigger threats than this," Ben retorted, which was true.
Though admittedly not by much. If Natalie's wolf was the size of a horse, the manticore was more like a buffalo, or even a small elephant, massive as well as tall. It looked like a crimson-hued lion, except for the enormous bat wings sprouting from its back and the armored scorpion tail rising from its rear, and the blue-eyed human face staring down at them. The image of a clean, normal-looking man made the beast that much more terrifying, especially when it opened its mouth, revealing row after row of razor-sharp teeth. Still, it was no dragon, so Ben didn't understand Charlie's concern. After raising his spell shooter, he concentrated and fired off a fire lance, aiming at one of the creature's wings. If he could injure it badly enough, it might turn tail and run before things got any worse. Except that, as Ben watched, his spell struck the manticore's left wing and bounced harmlessly off. Ah, now he remembered Charlie going on about the manticore once when they'd been studying legendary monsters. Poisonous tail, eerie cry, haunting eyes, razor-sharp claws and teeth, able to fly, and immune to magic. That, Ben had to admit, was a problem.
"Run!"
Charlie screamed, having already gotten a head start. This time the others listened. But even as they turned to flee, the manticore leapt into the air, flapped its wings and soared overhead. It landed on the other side of them, cutting off any retreat. A wingtip flung Josh to the side, and another nearly struck Natalie, though she sidestepped just in time. One of its enormous paws flicked forwards and battered at Charlie, knocking him back towards the others. Ben noticed his friend wasn't bleeding. Battered, yes, but he bore no other wounds, no great gaping holes. Apparently, The manticore, in batting at him, hadn't used its claws. The way its eyes narrowed and its mouth widened into a grin showed that it knew exactly what it was doing. It was toying with them. Ben raised the sword. Even though it was magic, it might still be able to hurt the monster, and was contemplating charging when he heard a sound behind him that made the hair on the back of his neck stand up. It was Natalie's wolf, and she was howling. Ben had never heard a sound like it before. He had heard dogs howl, of course, but that was like comparing a toy car to a bus or a tank. This was wild and free and powerful. From somewhere behind them came a faint echo in return. Only the echo continued and grew louder and then multiplied. Then suddenly, there were five large furred shapes bursting through the trees and charging the manticore.
Wait, there are more of them?
Josh asked, backpedaling quickly to keep from getting stepped on.
Not that I'm complaining.
It's her pack, and she's called it to help us,
Natalie replied, smiling up at their furred protector. They were definitely helping, Ben thought. The wolves were darting in at the manticore, nipping, then pulling away before it could retaliate. They kept dancing around it, shifting back and forth, making it difficult to keep track of any one wolf or to attack them. But they were able to attack it, and each nip drew a little more blood, which weakened it that much more. It wasn't going to be enough, though. Ben could tell that much already. They were annoying it and keeping it from going after him and the others, but that was all. Their teeth just weren't strong enough to pierce the manticore's tough hide in most places. If it got in a good shot with that tail... Ben remembered Charlie's explanation of manticore venom being one of the deadliest poisons in the Unseen Kingdoms. He shuddered. Ben wasn't sure just how much damage his sword could do, but he decided he was about to find out. As he slipped in between the wolves in an attempt to get close, one of them slammed into Ben and sent him flying. He scrambled up again and frantically looked around. The sword had slid away from him and was now between two vicious wolves and the deadly manticore. Ben looked around for inspiration and saw Joshua nearby.
Josh, cover me!
Joshua immediately came forward, shield at the ready. Ben stepped behind him, and together they pushed through. Before Ben could reach the sword, the manticore spotted him and must have seen him as a threat. After smashing its way through two huge wolves, it unleashed a wicked swipe of its tail. The tail came at Ben like a bolt of lightning, and Ben threw himself back. He wasn't going to be fast enough. The tail rushed down straight at his head and slammed into Elizabeth's shield. Joshua crouched over Ben, grimacing with effort as another strike smashed down.
Get the sword, Ben!
Throwing himself into a roll, Ben moved past the manticore. Scooping up the sword, he quickly found himself facing the manticore and had a sudden flash of inspiration. Back when he'd been sleeping over at friends' houses, he stayed once with a schoolmate who had a cat. One morning, while still half asleep, Ben had accidentally stepped on that cat's paw. Remembering that now, he raised his sword and stepped right up to the huge beast.
Come on, you ugly excuse for a monster! Hit me!
The manticore let out an ear-splitting roar and swiped down hard like a cat would swat a mouse. Ben leaned into the attack and jabbed Elizabeth's sword directly into its paw, the sword going in almost to the hilt. The shriek that erupted from it nearly flattened him, and Ben found himself tossed onto his backside as the creature howled and leapt into the air, yanking its injured paw free in the process. The wolves were quick to go after their now airborne foe, biting at its dangling limbs. Each wolf jump resulted in another small wound, and without grounding, the manticore lacked the leverage to strike with its tail or even to effectively use its claws. After a minute or so of this, the manticore evidently decided it had had enough. It shrieked again, beating its wings so powerfully the ensuing wind hurled the wolves away, giving it enough space to rise well above them. Then it wheeled about, spreading its leathery wings and flapping them quickly to carry it out of sight and deep into the forest.
Wow,
Ben said, rising to his feet and retrieving the sword again.
That was intense.
He turned to Joshua. Honestly, I wouldn't have said this a year ago. But you've got balls of steel.
Joshua barked a laugh.
I need them, seeing as how I've got a partner who's slightly mad.
No kidding,
Charlie agreed from off to the side.
How do you think I feel? That was clearly one of his less amazing plans. We were nearly all manticore food. They swallow their victims whole, bones, bags, weapons and all.
Good thing we had some help,
Natalie pointed out. She turned and wrapped her arms around the wolf, hugging the enormous creature.
Thank you.
The wolf yipped at her, licking her face one last time. She turned and stalked back into the forest with the rest of her pack. Natalie was obviously a bit upset to see them go.
Come on, Ben said finally, resting a hand on Natalie's shoulder. We need to keep moving. That town may not be as close as it looks, and we're going to want to get there before nightfall, just in case.
She nodded and swept away her tears before turning resolutely towards the city. Taking the lead, Natalie marched out of the forest and onto the long expanse of rolling hills and gentle valleys, in one of which was the small city that was their current destination. Chapter 23 The Lord of the Underworld.
Okay, how do we want to play this? Josh asked as they paused at the top of a hill.
They'd covered more than half the distance to the city and could see it clearly from here, and it was quite the sight. Ben liked Tasia quite a bit, but he had to admit that it always felt like a small town to him. This below was a real city. It might not be as big as London, not nearly, and certainly it didn't have buildings of the same stature, but it was the largest place he'd encountered in the Unseen Kingdoms, and he was more than a little awed by it. It stretched on for miles. What he could see in it was mostly brick and stone, with some wood and metal and even glass mixed in. Smoke was thick in the air, pouring out from various chimneys along the way. Even from here, he could hear the sounds of people, not in terms of specific voices, but just the general murmur of a large population moving about. It was nearly sunset, so most likely people were starting to finish up work, close up shop, and head home for the evening. Of course, he could also clearly see the tall, thick wall surrounding the city, and if he squinted, he could make out the guards pacing about atop it. He couldn't see any down by the open front gates, but Ben was sure they were there.
We could just walk up and say hi, Charlie offered. Hey, how's it going? Seen any dark elves around?
Natalie rolled her eyes.
Yeah, maybe not.
She tugged her hair back and into a loose knot. Ben clambered up to a slightly higher point so he had a better view of the small city.
Well, one way or another, we're going to have to scout it out. With a little luck, the others are down there somewhere. I'm sure with Crowbeck they'd have had less trouble in the wilds. Of course, they could be behind us, since we don't know how long their route was.
He climbed back down and sat on an outcrop on the hill. Pulling out some sort of fruit that felt and looked similar to an apple but was purple, he took a bite.
Okay, I've got a plan.
Charlie groaned, and even Natalie arched an eyebrow. Surprisingly, Joshua backed him up.
Okay, let's hear it then.
Ben scowled at his two best friends. He didn't know why there was any concern about his plans. They almost always came out all right in the end.
Well, it's simple, really. Two of us go down there from different directions and do our best to keep hidden while gathering info. One stays here to wait in case the others turn up, and the fourth comes a bit closer to keep an eye out in case there is any trouble. We all wear our cloaks, and Natalie can do one of those more basic illusion spells that makes it hard for others to focus on us.
Natalie nodded.
I should be one of the ones who goes on ahead and scouts it out, she suggested. See how we can get in with the least exposure. It just makes sense, with you boys having a hard time seeing in the dark or at any long distance.
She gave a half smile to them all.
I see how it is.
Ben chuckled and nodded. Yeah, fair enough. I think it would be right for me to go too. The sword seems to hide me sometimes when it's really dangerous. Plus, I've got some serious spells ready to use if I need to.
Joshua stood up. Well, no use in waiting. It's getting dark, and as Natalie pointed out, she's the only one who'll be able to see soon.
He smiled briefly.
Charlie, why don't you stay here and I get a little closer?
Charlie was already getting comfy.
I thought you'd never ask.
He pulled out a large apple he'd been saving and took a bite. Ben laughed.
Unbelievable.
Lining up, Natalie shot them one by one with a basic illusion spell, a slight blur covering each of them. Then they put on their cloaks, making them almost impossible to focus on. Charlie sat back again.
Wow, I can hardly see any of you, even from this close.
They started out, and by silent agreement, Natalie went one way and Ben the other. Joshua followed them a bit before crouching down between some bushes, making himself even harder to see. Under his breath, he muttered as they both crept out of sight.
Good luck, guys.
It was fully dark before Ben got back. He'd largely remained unseen, but had been forced to take out a few guards at one point and find a place to hide them. Limping a bit, he came into the small clearing Charlie had stayed in and found Natalie wasn't back yet. Charlie came up to him, but Joshua was still out.
"Any sign of them?" Ben asked.
Charlie shook his head.
"No, it's been pretty much uneventful since you guys left."
They both sat down.
"It looks like a pretty normal city. I managed to get an idea of the perimeter and the caliber of their guards," Ben said.
Charlie brought him some water, which he drank gratefully.
"Well," Charlie commented, "hopefully when Natalie gets back we can work out a good plan based on your shared data."
Ben felt the same worry he heard in his best friend's voice. A half hour went by before he finally heard a rustling nearby. He was just starting to his feet when Natalie reappeared.
"It's just me," she said softly, stopping beside them. "I wanted to make sure not to surprise you, in case you decided to shoot first and ask questions later."
"Yeah," Charlie agreed. "I'm pretty dangerous when cornered."
He struck a classic gunfighter pose, making the others laugh and reducing the tension.
"What did you find out?" Ben asked. "Did you find a way in?"
"I did," Natalie answered, looking more than a little pleased with herself. "Though it's not the nicest area."
She squatted down and traced a circle in the ground.
"This is the city, and this is the front gate," she explained, marking a spot on the side closest to them. "But over here," she indicated a place perhaps a third of the way around, "is the port. It looks like they've got guard posts out on the water to stop any ships from just wandering in. If you're on foot, you can come around the side here, climb just a little, and then slip in right where the docks start. Then you have to get through that part of the city to reach the rest. But it's a lot better than trying to sneak past those guards at the gate."
"Great," Ben told her, clapping his hands together.
He briefly updated them on what he had found, and then they settled down to wait for Joshua. Thankfully, he arrived only minutes later, appearing suddenly from the other direction. He had circled around to make sure no one was following. Joshua rapidly filled them in, further solidifying the info they already had, and they quickly decided on the simplest plan.
"Let's go," Ben said. "We can get into the city now, while there are fewer boats and nobody out and about, find a place to crash, and then be walking around like we've always been there when the sun comes up tomorrow."
The others nodded, and they fell into line, following Natalie back the way she'd come. Ben let Charlie and Josh go ahead of him, and he brought up the rear. They weren't far from the city, but they couldn't move very quickly in the dark. Natalie could see clearly, but the rest of them couldn't, and stepping in a rabbit hole could snap your ankle, which wasn't something they could risk right now. As a result, it took a while to reach the city walls. Then they had to creep around the side until they found the docks. Fortunately, the ground rose a little as it circled towards the water. The city was in a natural basin, which meant that at the wall's lowest point, Ben and the others didn't so much as have to climb. They just stepped over it and then clambered back down the other side. As it turned out, none of them had any problem getting over the wall, not even Charlie, though he did sweat a great deal and grumble almost as much. Finally, they were standing together at the far end of the docks, smelling fish, water and oil, as they looked out on the city that started just at their feet.
"All right, we're in," Josh commented. "Where to now?"
"Now we find a place to get some food, some gear and some sleep," Ben answered. "Tomorrow, we can ask around, or at least listen in, and see if anyone spotted Dagmar, Abigail and Crowbeg."
"Yeah, I would kill for a decent burger," Charlie declared,
rubbing his ample belly.
"And chips."
The others nodded, groaning, as each one of them evidently pictured that food as well. It was clear to Ben which of their three objectives would have to be first. Before they could take a step, however, Natalie drew her spellshooter.
"Hold still," she warned the others.
She shot Ben first, then Josh and Charlie, and lastly herself.
"What are you doing?" Ben asked.
But he wasn't really afraid. He trusted Natalie completely. Sure enough, his friend replied,
"Keeping the people from hating us, I hope."
And as Ben watched, Natalie's spell expanded to envelop him completely. He couldn't really see what it was doing, and he didn't feel any different, but when it was done, he found his reflection in a shattered window and almost couldn't believe it. It was like a dark elf was looking back at him. Josh and Charlie had transformed as well. Now three dark elves stood around a pretty elf girl like some sort of bodyguard.
"OK," Okay, off to find some dinner, Ben suggested. As long as we leave enough time for equipment and sleep, we should be good. They started off again. There weren't that many people out and about at this hour, and their disguises seemed to hold up well enough because very few even bothered to look at them funny. For his part, Ben kept up a strong, steady pace, that of one who knew exactly where he was going and how to get there. Sure enough, the few people who did notice the quartet stepped aside to let them pass.
Always act like you belong,
Ben could hear his bellsword instructor saying in his head. Most people will see that and decide that you must know what you're doing just on the way you walk. It looked like he'd been right. At least, he had been until a pair of particularly large and bulky shadows materialized out of the darkness in a particularly narrow alley. As agreed, Natalie moved in front so she could talk to them. She was the only one that could talk without ruining the disguise.
Can I help you?
Of the three who had come at them, the smallest stepped forwards, a nasty look on his face.
You absolutely can, my lovely.
He waved his hand, beckoning at someone behind them. Ben threw a look over his shoulder and saw a few other elves had moved in behind them, cutting off their only means of escape.
You have conveniently entered his lordship's domain, and so of course must be bearing gifts for him, which I, his humble servant, will willingly accept.
He gave a particularly nauseating smile, eyes roving up and down Natalie's body. Natalie, to her credit, remained calm, staring at the dark elf in a way that was similar to how Ben would look at the underside of his shoe when he had stepped on something that smelled particularly bad.
I have no idea what you are talking about. Please move aside, or my guards here will make you.
The small dark elf barked a derisive laugh.
Oh, they will they?
He looked at Ben and the others scornfully.
I assume you are new here, so I'll give you one more chance. There is a basic tax anyone passing through here pays, or they don't pass through. There is a special bonus for anyone who tries to skip payment. They never leave.
The two larger dark elves to his sides moved forwards, purple energy starting to seep out of their fingers. One loosened a sword in its scabbard. Violence was moments away, when Natalie nodded her head and reached into her purse, bringing out one emerald coin with Saktar's face on it. She flipped it end over end to the ugly little dark elf.
That should be enough.
He grabbed it out of the air and pulled out of his dirty overcoat a small looking glass. Squinting through it, he briefly verified the coin, licking his lips in a way that made Ben feel like throwing up there and then. With a flick of his hand, he indicated to his thugs to back off.
Okay, you may pass. Thank you so much for your patronage.
He gave a mocking bow, and they all backed up. Keeping an eye on them, Ben and his friends passed by, walking rapidly but slowly enough so it didn't look like they were afraid. After passing through a few alleyways, Ben moved up to Natalie. I'm not sure that was a great idea to give them an emerald coin. Did you see the look of greed in that creature's eyes? Natalie frowned.
I know, but I had to gamble. They might be following us now, but the other option was definitely going to be a confrontation, and that would have undoubtedly blown our disguise.
They walked through a few more alleys and paths, trying to find anywhere that had food. It was getting darker now, and harder to keep their bearings. Finally, Charlie smelled something, and took them down a path to the right. Sure enough, they came to a dingy-looking inn. It didn't take long to get a seat and order their food, as the place was quite empty. They managed to get a table far enough away from the entry so they could keep an eye on anyone who came in. While tucking into some sort of dark meat and stringy vegetables, Ben and Joshua kept an eye on the door. Natalie found out from the young dark elf girl serving them that there were still a few shops close by that would still be open if they wanted supplies.
I know it's dark already, but I think the quicker we get out of this place, the better. It doesn't seem like the friendliest place in the world, and I'm not sure who his lordship is.
Ben nodded in agreement.
I was thinking the same thing. I'd rather be out at night than be here for any length of time.
The food was strange but filling, and they washed it down with some bitter-tasting local drink that Natalie said was common in Aurelia. Loosening their spellshooters in their holsters, they followed the directions the girl had given them to the nearest shop. It didn't take long to get there, but to Ben's disappointment it was closed. He turned to Joshua, who'd written down a few notes of the area.
How close is the next one?
Joshua pulled out his scribbles and tried to decipher his own writing.
Looks like a 10-minute walk from what I understood.
They moved off again, quicker this time, feeling the pressure of being out in a dark elven town on their own.
It was in a particularly dark, narrow alleyway that it happened. He heard a grunt of surprise from behind him, and Ben immediately went to grab his spell shooter. Before he could pull it free, something shot out of the darkness and wrapped around his hand and holster, sticking them together. He tried to yank his hand free, but it just stuck harder. Backing up fast, he bumped into Joshua, who had also been trapped. They tried to turn around and run, but found they were surrounded. Before Ben or the others could so much as yelp, four large dark elves had grabbed them and hauled them back down that alley and then through a small, barely visible door set in a brick wall. The world went dark as they quickly and roughly frisked Ben and his friends, removing their packs. Unsurprisingly, the small, ugly dark elf turned up, swaggering through his fellow grimy friends.
"I have to say, I really didn't think you'd be stupid enough to come back out here tonight. But hey, I'm not going to complain."
He went straight to Natalie and personally relieved her of her purse.
"I'll take that, darling."
He smiled and brushed her cheek with his rough fingers. Ben then heard a shout from one of the others and saw that they had discovered Joshua's spell shooter. Ugly Face turned back to Natalie with a mixture of anger and alarm in his eyes.
"What is this?"
Moving quickly, he confirmed what he now obviously expected. They all had spell shooters. In his own tongue, he rapidly gave commands to his bushish fellows, and their hands were double secured away from the shooters, which were then cut away while still holstered and put in a bag. He went back to Natalie and grabbed her arm a bit roughly this time, all pretense of friendliness gone.
"Change of plan. You are coming with us, straight to his lordship."
The four friends were roughly tied together and then marched down through the endless winding paths and alleys. Ben was quickly lost after the 10th turning they took. Finally, they were dragged down a narrow flight of stairs and through a twisty set of corridors. By the time Ben was thinking he should try for the sword, which again had somehow remained hidden, they had already come to a stop, and he found himself standing in a tight, narrow room. There was barely space for himself, let alone his friends, the two bodyguards, a long wooden desk, and the lanky dark elf seated behind it, studying the four of them intently.
"Now tell me,"
the elf started, lounging back in his chair with his feet up on the desk and his hands steepled in front of him.
"What are three human boys and one half-elf girl doing here in my city? Especially carrying Institute-issue spell shooters."
Ben felt a shock run through his body. He hadn't registered that their disguise had worn off as they'd been moving in almost near darkness. The dark elf, who was apparently in charge, tapped his forefingers against his long, pointed chin and let loose a cackle.
"Someone is a long way from home."
Ben struggled to pull free from the dark elf holding his arm, to no effect.
"Who are you, and what do you want with us?"
he demanded anyway.
"Who am I?"
Their host looked surprised and even a little offended.
"Why, I am the Lord of the Underworld," he declared. "And as to what I want with you, well, that remains to be seen."
He nodded at his two bullies.
"Toss them in the cellar," he instructed. "I'll retrieve you once I've figured out how to put you to use," he warned Ben. "Till then, enjoy your night."
For the second time since this war had begun, Ben found himself being led away to a cell. At least this time it wasn't by his own people, he thought, but he still wasn't sure there was much he could do about it. As he looked across at Natalie, Ben was painfully aware she wouldn't be sneaking in to save them this time. Chapter 24 A Bit of Luck.
"Well, this is fun,"
Charlie declared. He was perched on a large wooden box and swinging his legs so that his heels kept slamming into the side.
"I'm sure wherever Suktor is having a good old laugh at this. The mighty guardians trapped in a cellar by a small-town crook."
"Not our finest moment, sure," Ben had to agree.
He was pacing in front of the heavy iron-bound door, which except for a tiny grating-covered window off to the side and a drain in the floor, was the only way in or out of this large, low-ceilinged space they'd been escorted to. He had tried the door the minute it was shut, of course, but it was extremely solid, as were its heavy iron hinges and its equally heavy lock. Without his spell shooter, there wasn't much Ben could do about either. Still, he refused to give up.
"We'll think of something," he insisted.
At least there was light, courtesy of the full moon outside. The window was small and high up, but it let in enough illumination for them to see.
"You've still got the sword, haven't you?"
Josh asked. Ben nodded and patted the scabbarded blade at his side.
"And I've got the shield. Maybe we can just wait for them to give us food and then rush them. There are four of us, after all."
"Four of us, and at least two of them, with the them in question being twice our size,"
Charlie countered. "And we don't have any magic. Well, they can blast us at will." He shook his head.
"Not exactly great odds."
Ben sighed. "No, it isn't," he agreed. "Besides," he reminded Josh, "you know it doesn't work like that. These artifacts may be incredibly powerful against Suktar and his soldiers, but otherwise they don't seem to be much more than good weapons. Remember, they have minds of their own, and they agreed to help us against Suktar, not some street thugs we were dumb enough to get grabbed by." Natalie frowned.
"So what? We just sit here waiting to be rescued, or used, or sold, or whatever?"
She had been sitting as well. This room was clearly an actual cellar, filled with various boxes, bags and barrels.
"Well, I'm not going to do that," she said, hopping to her feet. "We're going to get out of here and finish our quest."
Ben had been thinking the same thing, but hadn't come up with any good ideas.
"Did you have a way to manage that, exactly?"
He tried not to let it bother him when she shook her head.
"No, but maybe there's something here that can help,"
Natalie suggested, waving a hand at the clutter.
"We should look around, take stock, see if there's anything we can use."
Charlie stopped his banging.
"Yeah, that's smart,"
he admitted, clambering down off his own seat. He turned and pried at the lid he'd been perched on, finally managing to pull it up enough to peer inside. When he glanced up again, he was grinning.
"Apples,"
he declared, reaching in and pulling out a handsome red apple and then taking a big juicy bite.
"So at least we won't starve."
Still happily munching, he extracted three more apples and shared them around. Ben grunted. Leave it to Charlie to completely get over a dire circumstance just because they'd found some food. He didn't turn down the apple, however. After rummaging for an hour, they agreed to take a break and recap what they had found.
"So, we've got plenty of food," Ben summarized.
Thus far, they'd managed to find not only apples, but also potatoes, melons, bananas, dried peas, carrots, peanuts, hard cheese, some sort of flatbread, and even dried fish. There was also a large barrel of weak beer and a much smaller one of potent wine. Far more useful to them was the open barrel situated by that small window, with a pipe leading from one to the other. The barrel was full of water, presumably from whenever it rained. It smelled a little musty and metallic, but they'd sampled it and found it drinkable. "And we have a few random supplies, too." There were nails and rope and a bolt of canvas, plus a box full of small, rough wooden blocks that Ben was sure would have some use somewhere. "What we don't have are spells or spell shooters, or any weapons beyond the sword and shield." There had been a hammer tucked away on a shelf, but it was so old and worn, Ben suspected it would shatter if it was used against anything.
"We don't have a way out of here either," Josh added. "So even if we could fight our way free, we're still trapped in this cellar."
Charlie was thinking.
"Maybe we can yank the bars out of that grating," he suggested, pointing towards the window. "Then we can try to squeeze through?"
He looked down at his own stomach.
"Well, Natalie could anyway."
She nodded seriously. "If I could get through there, I might be able to go get help," she offered. "Find Dagmar, Krobeg, and Abigail, at least."
They brightened a little at that idea. Krobeg alone would probably make short work of this so-called Lord of the Underworld and his thugs. But after a second's consideration, Ben shook his head.
"We don't even know if they're here in the city," he reminded them. "And even if they are, how would you find them? Or us, if we got moved after that? No, it's better if we stick together."
No one objected to that. The idea of splitting their little group still further wasn't appealing to anyone.
"We'll think of something," he said finally, seeing that the others were beginning to look dejected again. "We've got food and water now, and space to stretch out, and we don't have to worry about getting jumped by monsters in the middle of the night. So I suggest we all get some rest. Let's see how things look in the morning."
The others agreed, and they rose to their feet, finding spots that would work for beds and arranging what sacks and bags they could find. Eventually, everyone was nestled down to one degree or another, and Ben closed his eyes, wondering if he'd be able to sleep at all after this. He was asleep almost before he finished that thought.
Psst!
The hiss woke Ben, and he started. leaping to his feet and grabbing for the sword, even before he'd managed to pry his eyes open.
Ben!
Glancing wildly about, he squinted and tried to see who was calling him.
Hello? He said. Who's there?
The door was still shut, and he didn't see anyone else in the room but him and his friends. The voice persisted, however, and now it was starting to become familiar.
It's me,
it answered, and he could now tell that it belonged to a young girl, a certain young girl in particular.
Abigail!
Abigail!
Ben's shout woke the other three, who jumped up and looked around.
Where are you?
We're nearby,
she promised, and he realized that he was only hearing her in his head.
And we're almost there. Are you guys okay?
Fine. We're fine,
he answered, lowering the sword and blinking to clear the sleep from his eyes. You?
Yes,
she replied, though something in her tone told Ben that she was hiding something from him.
Where are you exactly? I can see you, but not well. It's really dark?
We're in a basement, he told her. So, yeah, not a lot of light. There's one door and one small window to the outside. It's not big enough for us to get through, and it has a grating anyway.
Okay, I've got you now.
Her voice was becoming clearer and clearer with each passing second.
We're outside the building. I'm sensing a handful of dark elves inside. Who are they?
Ben knew what she was really asking. They're just crooks, he assured her. They found us and grabbed us, and now they're trying to figure out what to do with us. They took our spell shooters, packs and cloaks. Not the artifacts, though.
Right. Don't worry, we'll get it all back.
She went silent for a second, then added,
Be ready.
What's going on?
Charlie asked. They crowded around him.
Grab what food you can, Ben replied. They're coming to get us.
Everyone launched into action, snatching up empty sacks and filling them with food. They'd just regrouped with their bounty when a loud, heavy knocking came from the door. It repeated again, and then again, louder each time. Then the lock snapped with a horrible clang, and the door flew inwards, slamming against the wall. Crowbeg stood in the now open doorway.
Got you, he declared,
stomping in and administering hearty backslaps and handshakes.
Ready? Let's get out of here.
And after turning, he led the way back out. Ben and the others followed. As they climbed the stairs out of the basement, they passed one, then another dark elf. Each was unconscious. On the ground floor, they had to step over several more. Each one looked to have been punched or battered, or in a few cases, clubbed with something like a large, heavy silver axe. The dwarf had clearly been busy. Ben couldn't bring himself to feel sorry for the fallen dark elves. They might not be part of Suktar's army, but they were criminals, and they had kidnapped him and his friends. Abigail and Dagmar were waiting just inside the front door. Dagmar had everyone's cloaks and spell shooters, which she quickly handed out. But Ben's eyes were glued to Abigail and the silver helm she was openly wearing. He knew at once what that meant and why she had sounded alarmed when she contacted him.
You can take it off now, he told her,
and she did so quickly, giving him a grateful glance. Any problems?
Not like that,
she promised, shaking her head.
But I think someone noticed I was here. We need to go.
Absolutely.
Ben did a quick head count. All of them were there, and they had everything they'd come in with, plus the food they were liberating.
Okay, we're out of here, he declared,
and the others grinned as they followed him to the front door. Once out on the street, Ben turned to Dagmar.
Fastest way out of this city? He asked,
and the stocky teacher turned and pointed.
Lead the way,
he replied, and she quickly did so, stepping out in front and guiding them down the street and through a series of twists and turns. Crowbeg was bringing up the rear to protect them in case anyone gave chase, and Ben fell back a step beside Abigail.
Thanks, he told her.
She nodded, brushing a blonde strand out of her face.
We got here this morning, she explained as they walked quickly, and figured you'd turn up soon too, but you didn't, and we started getting worried.
A frown creased her pretty features.
Then I got the worst feeling. I just knew something was wrong, and that it had to do with you and the others, but we didn't know what, or where, or who.
The frown deepened, and she looked away.
I didn't want to use the helm. I'm sorry, but we didn't see any other way.
You did the right thing, Ben assured her.
He didn't blame her at all for wanting to keep the helm as a last resort. He knew she was worried about whatever dark elf had hijacked her eyes and her voice the last time, and about Saktar and any other powerful forces that might come after her mind while she wore the helm. But when it had been necessary, she'd conquered her fears and used it to find them. Now, as they picked up the pace to escape this city in case someone here had noticed, or worse, sent an alert, Ben still couldn't help smiling. The Guardians were together once more. Chapter 25. The End of the Journey.
"Are we there yet?"
Charlie asked. He wasn't being entirely serious, of course, but Ben decided to treat the question like he was. He glanced at Dagmar, who had not paid any attention. "You know we're not, Charlie. We just got out of the city, okay? But I would like to know how close we are, or at least how far it is to the palace." Dagmar harumphed.
"So would I," she agreed after a moment. "But right now I have no idea."
"What?" Ben stared at the stocky master apprentices and knew he wasn't alone. "What do you mean? You're the one with the boots. If you don't know how to get there, we're in real trouble."
"I didn't say I couldn't get us there," she responded,
with a hint of a bite to her voice.
"I said right now I don't know."
She turned to face the others. They were on a hill, looking down over the city, and had paused to catch their breath. If Saktar's guards were coming after them, Ben didn't see any sign, and they would certainly notice any pursuit from up here. He turned back to Dagmar, who was still talking.
"Using these boots is not like following directions," she explained. "I do not tell them the palace, and they spit out a list of turn left, turn right, go straight. I picture my destination, and then I see the way I should take to reach it quickly and safely. I have been focused on finding the four of you, and then I concentrated on the quickest and safest way out of that city behind us. Now I can stop and think and change my target to Saktar's palace."
The hint of a frown touched her brow.
"But the boots are confused. They are not showing an easy route. They seem unable to lock onto the palace at all."
She shook her head.
"It is as if the palace is hiding." "Hiding? The whole palace?"
Charlie smacked his hand against his forehead.
"Of course it is, because why would it be easy? We don't just have to get to the palace, we've got to figure out where it is first." "I can find it," Dagmar repeated. "It may just take a little more time to find it than before, at least for a comparable distance."
"I believe you," Ben assured her. And he did.
"So what should we do in the meantime?"
It was Abigail who answered.
"Why don't we have something to eat and get set up for the night?" she suggested. "Dagmar can meditate on the way while we do that, and if necessary, she can sleep on it."
Their youngest guardian offered her mentor a warm smile.
"I'm sure she'll know where we're going by the time we're ready to leave."
"Nice," Ben agreed. "But I think we should put a bit more distance between us and any dark elves that might be following us from that city first." After walking another hour or so away from the small city, they stopped for dinner, which wound up being a more lively event than Ben remembered them having at any time before that. They were back together again, and on top of that, they had managed to replace the food they'd lost when the lizard folk attacked, along with a few other supplies, like rope, that they had also acquired from that cellar. Ben suspected that they were determined to enjoy themselves as much as possible, as the danger was only getting worse, and they knew there was a very real possibility they might not all survive this. Eventually, Ben lay back and looked up at the clear sky, watching the stars and listening to his friends slowly fall asleep. It seemed like he was the last one to finally doze off, the responsibility for his friends weighing heavily on his shoulders. The next morning, Abigail's prediction proved correct. Dagmar was sitting calmly by the tiny campfire when the others awoke, and she had as much of a smile on her face as she ever got.
"It was difficult," she informed them, as calmly as if she were talking about what to have for breakfast. "And I believe there is a strong spell around the palace that fought me, but in the end it was no match for Elizabeth's boots. I know the way to reach it."
"Fantastic!"
Ben slapped her on the shoulder, though gingerly. After all, she was still in charge of them back at the Institute.
"How long do you think it will take us to get there?"
"A few days," she answered.
"The route will take us close to several more towns, but hopefully we can avoid them as much as possible."
"We might want to stop in at least one or two to get more supplies," Natalie pointed out.
"A few more water skins, if nothing else.
I could go in disguised as a dark elf, which I think would work, while you wait on the outskirts.
Handsome meat, Krove grumbled.
The burly dwarf had not been pleased last night to discover that they had brought any fruits, grains and nuts from the criminal's hideout. Not that they had even seen chicken or beef, only the dried fish, which had been too bulky to carry and smelly besides. He had made do, of course, but Ben didn't blame him for wanting something more substantial, if possible.
We'll see what we find along the way, Ben promised him. But for now, let's pack up and get going.
The others nodded and sprang into action, gathering their things and making sure they had cloaks, food, weapons, and everything else. In only a few minutes, they were ready to go, and Dagmar took the lead once more, guiding them down the hill. Ben glanced back once at the city before it disappeared from view. He was not sorry to see that place go. They reached the first town the following day. It was small, no more than a few dozen shops along a single main street, with homes spaced out behind that. They considered bypassing it, which would have been easy enough to do, but decided to chance this one. They could use water skins and a few other things, and this town was so small they'd be able to get in and out quickly, at least.
There aren't any of Sukhtar's army here,
Josh pointed out as they studied the place from a small hill just beyond it.
We'd see them if there were.
That was a good point, and the deciding factor. Even so, Ben decided to play it safe. He took Natalie and Josh into town with him while the others went around. That way, if they needed help, Krobeg and Dagmar could rush in. But Natalie was the only elf in the group, and he and Josh were at least tall and slim enough that they might fool people if they kept their hoods pulled down. It turned out that they need not have worried. The town had a small general store, and when they wandered in there, only the shopkeeper and his assistant were in sight. Natalie picked up the things they needed and carried them up to the counter while Ben and Josh hung back, staying quiet. She paid quickly, said thank you, and rejoined them, and the three of them headed back out together, not rushing, but not wasting any time. Then they continued on through the town. Dagmar and the rest were waiting just on the far side.
Any trouble?
She asked as they reunited.
None,
Ben replied, tossing back his hood. Natalie handled it perfectly. She rewarded him with a warm smile. They distributed their new purchases and then set out once more. They were not as lucky at the next town. It was larger than the last one, and even from a short distance away, they could already see the armour of Sukhtar's troops, many of whom were grouped out in the town square and all along the front of the building facing it, which was most likely the local tavern.
There are far too many of them,
Natalie warned, studying the scene with her sharp elven eyes.
We should just go around it.
Won't that take us almost half a day out of the way? Krobeg asked. I can handle them if needed, although I know it will be a noisy affair.
They turned to look at Ben. He sighed. He had to balance their urgency versus drawing attention to themselves. It was frustrating and more than a little hard to manage, with countless good men and women losing their lives and homes back in England.
We go around, he said finally. Maybe we'd win, maybe we wouldn't, but we can't take the chance. Better to lose a little time than to lose one of us, or worse. Besides, I don't want Sukhtar to know we're coming until the last minute, to give us the best chance of succeeding at this mad quest.
Krobeg nodded, an approving look in his eye. Ever since gaining Elizabeth's breastplate, he had been eager to fight, but he was far from stupid, and was as determined as any of them that their mission succeed. They took a long path around the town, keeping their eyes open and their spell shooters out in case there were wandering patrols. Ben wasn't happy about the delay, but he did breathe a sigh of relief when they were well past that town safely. Later that night, though, Ben found himself pacing their campsite.
"What's bugging you?"
Charlie asked finally, sitting up and peering at him.
"I don't know,"
Ben replied. He glanced about. It was quiet, and everyone else was already asleep.
I just keep feeling like somebody's watching us.
He shook himself and shrugged.
I know, I'm probably just going nuts or something.
Charlie just looked at him sharply.
You say that, but I'll never forget your freaky sixth sense. Have you asked Abigail?
He looked around, eyes getting slightly wide.
Maybe one of Sukhtar's guys is following us, like that Shadow Seeker?
They both shuddered. The Shadow Seekers were an elite unit in Sukhtar's army,
incredibly dangerous and extremely good at sneaking in places. If one of them was following the Guardians, they could be in real trouble. Especially if the Shadow Seeker was keeping Suktar informed as to where they were. Ben nodded.
I did ask her, he replied. She didn't sense anyone nearby. I just can't shake the feeling.
Finally, Charlie shook his head.
Fine. Let's just keep an eye out. I think Josh has a few tracking spells. They're usually for hunting game, but they'll pick up anyone passing by. I'll ask him to set a few.
Ben considered that.
Yeah, good idea, he agreed at last. Thanks.
But it still took him a while before he was able to get to sleep. It was late afternoon the following day when they emerged from a small copse of trees. Up ahead, silhouetted against the start of a glorious sunset, was the unmistakable outline of a huge, sprawling stone castle. The air in front of it shimmered like some sort of heat wave that was hard for the eye to focus on. Ben looked around, trying to see it better, and noticed that a glow was rising from Elizabeth's boots on Dagmar's feet. Dagmar saw him staring at them and nodded.
The only reason we can see this place is some sort of spell emanating from the boots. Otherwise, not only would we not see it, we would feel an urge to go around this whole large area.
It was the largest castle Ben had ever seen, the outer wall curving off to either side and vanishing in the distance. He couldn't decide if it was beautiful or outright scary. They were still far enough away and hidden by trees that no one could spot them yet. It was a miracle they'd gotten this far, really, without anyone stopping them. Ben knew part of that was because Suktar had committed a huge number of his troops to the war effort, which must have left gaps in his security patrols. He was just searching for higher ground to get a better vantage point when Natalie gasped.
"Look out!"
she shouted, pointing to the side. There, half hidden among the trees, was a dark elf patrol of 5 spearmen. 4 of them faced off against the companions, but the 5th turned and ran back towards the castle. Ben drew his spell shooter and cast a level 2 ice bolt, the spell coming out fast and shooting towards the nearest spearman's chest. He drew his sword and closed in, only to see the spearman swipe his spell out of the air and knock it towards Joshua, who just barely blocked it with the shield. He cursed under his breath as he realized that any guards this close to the palace wouldn't be any mere spearmen. Krobeg was lagging a bit behind, but Ben turned to him.
"Krobeg, they're all yours!"
With a roar, the silver dwarf launched past, smashing into the spearman with his axe. The first went flying into a nearby tree, while the second stabbed at Krobeg's chest and watched the spear shatter in his hands. A great sweep crashed in the second one's helmet. Then Krobeg grabbed the last 2 and slammed them together. Silence settled over the small hill, hard breathing the only sound. Ben, Joshua and Krobeg turned to see the others arrive. Ben grabbed Krobeg by the forearm and squeezed.
"Thank you. That taught us a lesson. Anyone we meet here is going to be an elite guard and a lot harder to take down."
He turned to the others.
"This is where we use our hardest spells or our armor if it has any offensive abilities. If this fight is anything to go by, nothing else will make any difference."
Charlie was still breathing hard after running to catch up.
"Well, things are probably about to get even scarier, if that's possible."
He turned back and looked towards the castle.
"I'd say it's somewhat unlikely that our little incident here went unnoticed."
As if his words had been some sort of dark prophecy, a long, shrill horn blew from the direction of the castle. They all turned to look. Dust was coming from one side of the castle as a huge gate opened there. Natalie squinted and could just make out black horses with equally shadowy riders.
"It's the Dark Elf Knights. Not as fast as their light cavalry, but they'll be faster than us on foot, and their armor is magically resistant."
The others nodded and turned to face their final objective. A long field separated them from the castle, rising as it went, so that Suktar's stronghold was situated atop a wide, low hill with a commanding view of the countryside, which meant, of course, that anyone watching from there would see them coming. There wasn't anything they could do about that now. Ben took a deep breath and let it out loudly. His heart was beating fast, and he felt a bit queasy. Running from possible death to almost definite death evidently didn't agree with his stomach.
"Okay, Guardians," he called out.
Let's jog halfway, pick up the pace in the third quarter, and sprint to the end to stand a chance of getting there before we are overrun by those knights.